Hey Siri, play Social Geek Radio.
Okay, Social Geek Radio podcast coming up.
Hello, geeks, and welcome to Social Geek Radio. I'm Jack Munson, your host and social media consigliere. Today's guest is Shelley Sun, and today's episode is brought to you by Franchise Payments Network, Subtle Strauss, and Scorpion. It seems like digital marketing channels pop up every day with social media, Google search, video, apps, email, mobile, and more. Your franchisees are spending more time and money juggling more vendors than ever before, all while trying to make sense of an endless stream of data that's dumped into spreadsheets. Scorpion is a digital marketing company that helps franchise brands and their franchisees get out of the weeds of digital marketing. With a combination of technology and expertise, Scorpion connects all of the marketing dots to provide clear, personalized plans that are measured against the one thing that your franchisees care about the most: revenue growth. Finally, a cohesive, brand-approved strategy for all your franchisees that eliminates the time-consuming, expensive, and confusing task of managing an ever-expanding list of disconnected marketing platforms and vendors. I think we can all appreciate fewer invoices and meetings and better results. To learn more, visit scorpion.co/geek. That's scorpion.co/geek. Shelley Sun is the founder and CEO of Bright Star Care and is the former chair of the International Franchise Association. It's been a hot minute since she and I have been able to check in with each other and catch up. So I'm so thrilled that she's joined us here right now on Social Geek Radio. Shelley, how are you?
I'm doing great. Glad the country's starting to do better. So great to talk to you and be able to join you.
Yeah, absolutely. Things seem to be, I know we've said this many times in the past, but things seem to be turning the corner a little bit right now. Like I said, it's been a while since you and I have chatted at whatever the last franchise event that we saw each other at a year and a half ago. Tell me a little bit about how your industry, both franchising and senior care, has changed, and I'm sure it's dramatic, in the past year to 18 months.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's been certain cycles to it. So, you know, we're about 13 months or so since kind of the onset of the pandemic. And certainly in those weeks that followed, there was a lot to do and get ready for within all small businesses, but certainly home care in particular, in terms of access to PPE and getting that disseminated to all of our offices so we could keep clients and caregivers safe. And we leaned in very heavily to do that. We saw shifts in our business mix in the early stages. Clients still wanted care, but what we saw is it was difficult during certain periods of time, and true today, to access labor that could be making more money not working than working. Yeah. So that makes the recruiting pipeline difficult. You know, the food sector is seeing the same thing as we are, similar wages of individuals that we all need to make it work. And so I think a lot of what helped Bright Star during the pandemic and is very true today is that we have helped our franchisees pivot to a lot of the nursing opportunities, where those are jobs with wages that they are not better to be on unemployment. And so since we were able to provide N95 masks from, you know, the very beginning of April to all of our nurses on the front line and to our caregivers who needed them as well, we've been able to attract those that wanted one-on-one care versus one-to-many, and wanted to ensure their brand was keeping them safe with access to PPE. And our franchisees, you know, by the end of the year 2020, had grown over 19% year over year. So making up for that initial dip and then, you know, replacing that and growing more. Fourth quarter and first quarter, we're seeing growth rates at an agency level year over year, quarter over quarter, in excess of 20%.
Wow.
So we're very pleased with how the business model has been nimble and broad to be able to pivot to where the opportunities were. It meant that our franchisees and we had to really partner together to make sure we were navigating, kind of charting the course to where the opportunities were going to be and where the labor supply was going to allow us to meet those opportunities. And a lot of temperature checking in the early days, which still continues today. We've done that in a lot of the major airports with a lot of the Fortune 500. We were honored to be part of one of the COVID vaccination trials to get through FDA approval, helping one of the large pharmaceutical companies bound by confidentiality agreement, because I can't say who, but one of the large pharmaceutical companies. And we're honored to be a part of that. And now are working with a lot of different organizations, helping to get the vaccination disseminated and administered in markets across the country.
Wow, that's impressive. And thank you for that. I am halfway through my vaccination process right now. So we're glad you were a part of that early on. And I do want to talk about the brand and sort of the direction of the brand, but I want to go back to something you said about the PPE. You were definitely a leader in getting resources together to make sure PPE was available not only to your franchisees and your franchisees staff, but to competitors and other people in senior care and you know, everybody else in the industry. What made you jump on that so quickly?
You know, I think that there are moments in time where you just have to focus on what is the greater good. And it was really an opportunity to help our vulnerable seniors, whether they were our clients or others, be able to stay safe. And, you know, those are everybody's grandparents or moms and dads that we needed to lean in and do the right thing and keep them safe. And also, you know, make sure that we were helping small business and franchising. You know, a lot of the food sector and home care and other sectors remained on the front line and remained open. And so, I am very blessed to be a Young Presidents Organization member, so YPOer. I had friends that I've built relationships with over the last two decades that I reached out to, and I didn't stop nearly 24 hours a day for those first 3 weeks sourcing PPE. Because you had to source things in that, at that time in 10,000 or 100,000 minimum order quantities. I knew there was absolutely going to be a need, and we had a balance sheet we could put to work. I still own 100% of my company. It allows me to make decisions that are based upon heart, not based upon just the bottom line. And our franchisees needed me to do the right thing. Our consumers and our caregivers needed me to do the right thing. And ultimately, our country needed me to do the right thing. And so I'm blessed to have some great partners and friends in the franchise industry. Reached out to David Barr, who sits on my board of directors, and to John Rocci. Knowing they had an inventory fulfillment brand and capability, because while I never had to really source PPE, I also didn't have a way to bring it in, store it safely, because a lot of things were getting stolen back in that day. You know, sure, if anyone was bringing an N95 mask, you had to worry about it being stolen.
Those were like gold at one point.
Exactly.
Sure.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm like, I don't know how to do this, but I need the help. And so John Rocci, myself, and Dustin Hansen at InExpress kind of partnered together for the International Franchise Association and reached out to the franchisee forum and franchisor forums of IFA to say, look, I've used my balance sheet. We're going to sell them at cost. Rachi didn't charge anything for the fulfillment capabilities that their brands kind of leaned into and helped us, and InExpress didn't charge a markup on the shipping. So we all partnered together to really think about how do we get franchising back, get franchisees back open, and get our country back started again, and did the same thing by offering it out to my competitors. Again, there are many ways to win the competitive advantage game, but that's a long game.
Yeah.
And in the short term, safety should never be something that's a competitive advantage. Everybody needs us thinking about the communities and the country as a whole and those clients that were the most vulnerable. And that's what we did. And I would do it again, and it felt like the right thing to do. But we did put $2.2 million of my balance sheet to work. We never charged a markup to anyone in franchising. So arguably, we lost money to do that. But it, again, it was the right thing to do. And then right before the holidays, when we all expected spikes of increased cases with families likely congregating around the holidays, after 9 months of being kept away, we sent about $800,000 of PPE to all of our franchisees, so at no cost to them. So they would have PPE on hand, again, to keep their employees and their clients safe, which was the right thing to do.
Wow. We could study this sometime in the future and come back and say, why was there not a big spike around Thanksgiving and Christmas when we were expecting one? Well, maybe it was some increased PPE that kept enough people safe at that time. So that's a terrific story. And I'll tell you what else I love about that is franchising is built on relationships. And I love that you went right to your network and pulled those long-term friends and partners in to work with you on this. That's fantastic. So let's talk a little bit about Bright Star Care. Obviously, everything's different in the past year and a half. How has this changed the brand? And where do you see your next phase of growth and sort of what's your next direction for Bright Star?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think we were fortunate coming into the pandemic. You know, we've had a point of differentiation for the last decade that all of our franchisees are Joint Commission accredited. You know, what does that mean? It means that every single one of our locations and every caregiver they've ever hired for the, you know, since, you know, 2013 have gone through a hand hygiene as part of their orientation, and they have to demonstrate that they know how to wash their hands with soap for the equivalent of singing happy birthday twice. And you think about that, of how the whole country's had to learn really what hand hygiene is. You know, you get around some of that with hand sanitizer, but you know, in the home in the early days particularly, it was really important that caregivers knew how not to spread COVID-19. And the fact that we already knew how to do that on a daily basis, I think allowed us to really focus on what is going to be next, because our caregivers and our franchisees were so ready with having directors of nursing in every location as a point of differentiation as well. We were really able to navigate a lot of the things that were really probably a hardship for a lot of other brands, and allowed us to lean into really partnering further with our national accounts. About 25% of our franchisees' revenue comes from business that we generate for them through national account partnerships, both because of the breadth of our business model and having nurses and caregivers, but also the fact that we're Joint Commission accredited. That gives, you know, whether that's workers' comp organizations or infusion companies or pharmaceutical companies for these clinical trials, drugstore chains for the administration of the vaccines, it gave them confidence that they could partner with us. And we rolled out and evolved into increased capabilities. We've gone from a 4-person national account team at the beginning of 2020 to a 12-person team now. So we've tripled the size of that organization, because we saw how much in demand we are and how we could make our partners' lives easier by streamlining some functions and some processes and building in technology. So a lot of our national account partners at large scale and volume have integrations with our technology platforms, because we own our own technology. So it's really allowed there to be connectivity and shared business purpose and efficiency built in because of our investments long ago in technology. And I think we've really leaned into that. So, you know, a year ago, it was probably 20% of our franchisees' revenue. Now it's 25%. We believe we can get that to probably half of the business model over the next 3 years. And that's where we're continuing to innovate and invest. We just joined, press releases will come out next Monday, but we just joined the Moving Health Home Coalition, because we believe there's a lot greater opportunity ahead of us to move more care to the home setting. I think that the outcomes for patients are better. The overall costs borne by government or insurance companies is less when home care is involved. And there are a lot of demonstration projects of certain procedures that have otherwise been done in hospitals occurring in the home. And so hospital at home programs, and we're a part of several of those demonstration projects. projects. Similarly, a lot of hospitals discharge their patients to skilled nursing facilities or SNFs, and there are demonstration projects underway to discharge directly from hospital to home with a SNF alternative with the same type of layers of service, including nursing services, but to be administered in the home versus in the nursing homes that did not fare as well during the COVID crisis, where many communities had rampant outbreaks and many deaths. And I think families are really stepping back and thinking about where do they want to age in place and where do they want their loved ones to age in place. And we want to be a part of that care continuum as to where families want to make safe and wise decisions for themselves and their families. And so we're leaning in both from a policy perspective, but also from an innovation in terms of data, studies, outcomes, tracking, care pathways, and then some of these alternative ways to do more in the home and partnering with others and sharing our information broadly so we can see if we can't make the country and the delivery of care much better over the next several years.
You talked a lot about innovations and investments, and something that we hear on this podcast a lot when we're talking with CEOs, especially in the franchise space, is so many people think that brands made a big pivot in April of 2020 and they just started investing or they started innovating in some new direction. But it sounds like with many of the other successful brands, that was something that you already had been planning for months or years in advance with some of the technology that you own or directions that you were looking at moving to. It wasn't just an overnight, hey, let's create something new. There were many things that you had made investments in that were maybe on the back burner that you brought forward. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I mean, I think it falls in a few different levels. I mean, we've had our technology that our franchisees are on and they use for scheduling. All of the caregivers across the country are checking in when they're at a client's home. They're asking some key questions to see if there's been a change in diagnosis. So we have mobile technology for all of our caregivers across the country. And so those things were in place. And I think that was important because it allowed us to roll out before any other technology provider in the home care space. And we share actually what we did with the other technology platforms, because again, it was safety shouldn't be a competitive advantage. So once we had coded how to use screen caregivers before they go into someone's home for the key kind of questions around, you know, 100.4 degrees, you know, coughing, shortness of breath, all of those kind of key health questions before they actually went and had face-to-face contact with a customer. We had that in place within 2 weeks of the onset of COVID and shared that. Most of the technology platforms had that in place about 4 to 5 weeks after the onset. So we hope that we were able to accelerate their venture, but because we already had the technology platform, we were able to use that to help with the day-to-day. So I think that was very helpful that we already had technology. You know, we consider ourselves to be very, you know, innovative and forward-leaning as an organization. I never wanted all the things we were going to invest in with our strategy group, with our national account group, to have to go to one of the technology platforms and say, here's all the ways I'm growing my franchisee's revenue. Will you code it for me on your timeline and then charge me to do it and then give it to all of my competitors, right? So, we had invested pre-pandemic about $10 million more than our franchisees have paid into a technology fund cumulatively. So we've probably made about an $18 million investment in technology over the last 16 years or so, but $10 million more than franchisees have contributed towards that. But to me, it is one of our biggest points of differentiation that has really allowed us to pivot and navigate quickly. And we've looked at opportunities to add on to that. So, you know, those things were in place before the pandemic, to your point. I think where have we doubled down during the pandemic, but we already had a platform to build upon. We already had outcomes tracking predicated based upon all of the mobile interactions between caregivers and clients. So that was already helpful. So we had great data to inform outcomes. I think continuing to use those outcomes and building care pathways where we do different things based upon the diagnosis of the patient to help improve their quality of life and therefore the peace of mind of their families. So we've been able to take, you know, existing technology, but iterate it. We've been able to take national account capabilities, and instead of doing that work for them, we've opened up APIs so we can integrate between our technology platform and our national accounts platforms. That makes the relationship stickier. Means that as long as we're doing a good job, there would be no reason for them to want to move because we're keeping things too efficient for them, and our franchisees are doing a great job servicing them. So yeah, we had a great platform, but we did, you know, make some pretty serious investments in 2020 to build out our technology and our team in certain areas where we believed we could do good, we could capture market share, and we could help our franchisees continue to pivot and move more and more of their business mix with time towards the nursing dependent mix of business that will be far above $15 minimum wage, with a client base being B2B to C that can afford the labor costs versus having too much of our business model dependent on caregivers, certified nursing assistants, and home health aides, where moving from maybe, you know, $11 in Alabama to $15 would mean a 40 to 60% increase in rates overnight to a client that might be living on a fixed income. And while we'll make sure we're delivering the highest level of care, and still making home health aides and caregivers available, I think that puts a lot of hardship on our franchisees, depending on the availability of workforce at that lower end of the wage range. And so we want to make sure our business model is broad enough. I don't envision home care on the personal care side going down over the next decade, but will right. the mix and the upside opportunity pivot more into the clinical nurse and therapy dependent spaces? I do believe that is the case. And we've been building out on that hypothesis over the last 3 years and leaned into it more heavily during 2020. And we'll do so in 2021.
Back in a moment after this word from Subtle Strauss. Subtle Strauss eliminates the franchisor marketing busy work of redundant customizations while protecting brand standards by giving franchisees self-service access to customize, print, download, and mail brand right collateral for their local markets from one central online portal. They offer franchises scalable solutions for managing their marketing collateral, direct mail, promotional products, and signage needs. Growing brands like Goldfish Swim School, Christian Brothers Automotive, and Topper's Pizza have saved thousands of dollars and have been able to run their marketing programs with a small graphic design staff by leaning on Subtle Strauss as a strategic marketing partner. You can get a free demo or download some case studies at subtlestrauss.com/franchise. Literally the biggest challenges, well, let's say, except for the federal government, the biggest challenges that so many franchisees across all sectors face right now is that labor challenge. And correct. You know, kind of going in an upward direction solves that problem. It also creates massive opportunities for so many people in this country right now. What else do you see happening in the world of franchising, let's say over the next 12 months, that other franchise leaders really need to focus on and be aware of and get ready for? Anything sort of top of mind for you right now?
Yeah, I think you hit on it in terms of interaction with government. I think it's important for all franchise leaders to be aware of the legislative changes that are being discussed to get themselves and their franchisees engaged and being part of the policy and unintended consequences discussions. We have activated our franchisees. Over the last year, we have had over 2,000 pieces of communications with members of Congress by our franchisees, and probably over 300 to 400 phone calls with members of Congress. And in a given week, there's probably 40 to 50 of those phone calls going on right now, because there's a lot going on, whether it's the infrastructure and how will home care be a part of that? How are we going to pay for it in terms of tax policy? How do we think about unemployment and the difficulty that's causing for small businesses to access labor? How do we think about workforce development in terms of immigration and programs to take those that are unskilled labor and skill them up with government programs to help employers do that? And then franchising, you know, right in the crosshairs with the PRO Act that's already passed the House, would dismantle franchising as we know it. And so the only way you keep that from happening is get engaged and get active. And it's where I spend 20 to 30 hours of my week every week for probably the past 3 to 4 months, is having all these policy conversations, both sides of the aisle, productive, thoughtful. Do minimum wages at the federal level need to move up from $7.25? Absolutely. We're coming off a pandemic. How quickly? What's the pace of change that small businesses can afford? We're very pro-employee, but we also believe jobs need to be there. And if we move too far too fast and we don't recognize that the cost structure and living costs in Alabama are very different than they are in DC, New York, Chicago, and San Francisco, you know, we could run our country off a cliff. And what has been small business that accounts for 50% of the jobs in the country could really have a lot of headwinds to make them go away and go away forever. So I think we have to be really thoughtful and careful, and therefore engagement in the political processes and advocacy is absolutely essential right now.
That's very impressive. You're still spending that much time per week dealing with government regulations and conversations with people who could be making policy. It seems like forever ago that you were the chair of the IFA and spending even more time on that, but it really wasn't that long ago. We're just in this time warp now, I think.
It's true. 2017, 2018. But, you know, some things that I started during my year as chair, you know, we had a lot of tax changes in 2017. I was, you know, kind of on the ground floor with some of those that really helped, you know, our small businesses and flow through, in particular with the 20% reduction. But I also was part of working with FASB on some of the 606 changes that affected mm-hmm. franchisors. And we didn't get that victory until the first quarter of 2021. So I've stayed very engaged with the IFA on that issue that's continued to have legs over the last 3 or 4 years. And then, you know, we've been dealing with AB5 in California and joint employer, you know, issues across the country for the last few years. And I've been very engaged, very vocal on those things. And now kind of with some of the PRO Act passed the House, you know, and it didn't pass the House in 2019 when that came back up, but it did pass you know, within the last few months. And so I think that's very concerning for all franchisors. And it means that we need to be having the right conversations. You know, in the last 2 weeks, I've been, you know, honored to have access to Senator Sinema and Senator Kelly in Arizona. And oh, both wow. of them, while, you know, Democrat, are very pro-business and very understanding of the franchise business model and its place and prominence in the economic kind of recovery. They really have been a pleasure to work with and engage with. And so, you know, we're really trying to be thoughtful. You know, I developed a great relationship with Congresswoman Velasquez. She chairs, you know, SBA or Small Business Committee. And we got, you know, to know each other really well going through the FASB changes. And she was a big supporter to get that done for non publicly traded franchisors to not have to adopt 606 in the same way that was really taxing for franchisors and emerging franchisors in particular to do. And so I have found her to be someone I can absolutely have pro-business, pro-small business policy discussions with. And her team has been great to put some of our ideas with regard to tax policy. Look, we've just spent $5 trillion. Taxes are going to go up, obviously. But let's be thoughtful that a flow-through tax return for a franchisee or franchisor small business is very different than the tax return with the same income of a hedge fund manager that doesn't create jobs. And so how can we encourage job creators to create more jobs and make sure that their taxes don't rise when they're reinvesting their money back in to do that? And I'm finding great engagement and positive discussions when coming at it from a, we want to offer solutions and we just want to make sure there's not unintended consequences for our small businesses across the country. And I'm finding the receptivity on obviously the Republican side of the aisle when it comes to, you know, not increasing taxes, but we all have to recognize they're going to increase in some form or fashion. It just has to pay for what has gotten the country restarted. But I'm developing and rekindling a lot of the relationships that I developed on both sides of the aisle when I served as IFA chair, because, you know, IFA has really tried to move itself from what was probably a 90% Republican supported organization on the PAC side, you know, a decade ago to maybe not 50-50 yet, but probably 60-40. Right. That's a lot of movement in a 10-year period of time. And I think while those inside the Beltway might not have realized how much bipartisan is going to matter, and it can't just be saying we're going to bring people together and we're going to find common ground and we're going to do things in a bipartisan way. You actually have to do it. And voters and job creators back in the states that elect our officials want it and expect it. And that's the approach we're trying to take, is getting involved with both sides of the aisle. We all have to be part of the solution. Nothing's going to be perfect for either party, but what cuts its way through the middle that's palatable to all sides, but doesn't take us off a cliff on one side or the other.
Yeah. If you thought the last couple of years were interesting in DC, wait till you see 2022, right?
Yeah.
Before we go, you've made some very impressive leadership lists in the past year. And one that really kind of knocks my socks off is one from Glassdoor, where they ranked the top 25 CEOs in the United States during the COVID-19 crisis. And there you are on that list of the top 25 CEOs. Very impressive. I'm also looking at this list and noticing a couple of things. I don't think there's another franchise organization on this list. And I think you are the only woman on this list. So congratulations on that, because Glassdoor doesn't say very many nice things about anyone. So to be on this list is quite an accomplishment. What kinds of things are you sharing with our next generation of leaders and franchise executives and CEOs? What kinds of advice are you giving the next group right now?
Yeah, absolutely. I think two things. One, I think in times, particularly this last year, you really need to sacrifice and give it your all. You know, everybody's looking for the tone, the tenor, the spirit of the leader, and they're going to take their cues from that. I was doing a video for all of our franchisees once, if not twice a week, during the first few months of COVID, to let them look into my eyes and say, yeah, it's going to be okay. Here's what we're working on. Here's what we're doing for the here and now. Here's how we're positioning for the brand after this. And so I think communication and leaning in is really important. I think in franchising, what I think I try to do and continue to try to do with a lot of the next generation of leaders is franchisees are very astute. They recognize how their franchisor makes money is based upon revenues.
Yeah.
The things that you do with intentionality to help a franchisee be better, help a franchisee grow, help a franchisee sustain, that have nothing to do with revenue, will be remembered and should be prioritized. So, I mean, PPP loans, every franchisee that qualified got a PPP loan in my brand. That was, 7 days a week. I was talking to franchisees at, 10 o'clock at night on a Friday night going, you have to cure these things with the lender. You have to get it back tomorrow. I need to see everything and update by Sunday. And we were sending out spreadsheets of every single franchisee, their loan, where it stood, so that we left no man or woman behind. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's a great demonstration of you got to give it your all, but you've got to give your all on the things that help your franchisees lower stress and sustain. And then what are the things that you're focusing on in communicating to your franchisees, their direct leadership team, and doing things like we did with PPE of it didn't make me any additional revenue. It cost me money. It cost time and stress, but it was the right thing to do. And I think that's an important life lesson is if you're doing the right things by the ultimate customers we serve and the employees that we have the honor to work with every day, especially the last year. I mean, they're doing the Lord's work, right?
Yeah.
Doing that and giving it your all, I you'll be rewarded for it on the economics eventually, but you got to do those things and you got to do them when called upon and lean into it more, particularly when others are stressed, because you're in a position to do that. So kind of giving it your all and not just on the things that are going to make the economics better for you. It's really focusing on what's going to make the economics and stress better for the franchisee. Because when the relationship is tested, and it certainly was the last year, franchisees now, our network has never been stronger. And we're able to speak to, are we, charging 1% higher on national account revenues? Absolutely. It doesn't cover the cost of my team going out and getting that business and onboarding that business and technology supporting that business. But we demonstrated we were there for PPE and PPP and things that were not revenue generating because we were there for our franchisees and the customers and employees that associate with our brand. The second one is building and maintaining a strong professional network. If you're of age to join, Young Presidents Organization or EO and Vistage, those kind of organizations, and really invest in. You get out what you put in. And I've been investing in relationships for a couple of decades. I rarely ask for help. This last year, I really learned how to ask for help because my franchisees needed me to. But I had a network of friends in franchising, whether that's David Barr or John Rachi or Dustin. There were people who helped my franchisees help me to allow us to do more and better. But you invest in others' relationships for a long time, but then you need to be smart enough to ask for help when you know you need it. And by asking for help, I was able to do more for my franchisees and make a bigger impact on the world, our communities, our country, that I wouldn't have otherwise had the opportunity to do if I hadn't asked for help and hadn't invested in those relationships that I've spent a lot of time building with a lot of friends like yourself. We have fun at the IFA conventions, but it's also, wanting to know how things are going with you as a human being, right?
Yeah.
And making those investments and enjoying it for years, decades, will benefit that next generation a lot. You never know when and how you can help others or when they can help you. But you only figure that out if there's really, truly a deep relationship. And relationships are not about what can they do for me. It's more about what can I do for them. And doing that for a long time, not expecting to take in return, I was able to really have my cup filled from my advisors, from my friends, from my relationships within franchising and healthcare this past year.
Excellent advice. Nothing better than building those relationships, whether it's within franchising or any other business or network you're involved in. If anyone would like to learn more about Bright Star or maybe some of the other things you're involved in right now, where can we send them?
Absolutely. Thanks. Brightstarcare.com would probably be the easiest place to go to learn more about us. And we continue to kind of provide updates on our Facebook pages as well. So anything with regard to the brand, you can find us on any of the social media sites and then our website as well.
Excellent. Shelly Sun, thank you so much for all of the time you've given us today. And we look forward to chatting with you again real soon down the road.
Sounds great. Thanks, Jack.
you're looking for something buzzworthy to reward your customers with, check out Pollinate. It's an all-inclusive loyalty and gift card technology company focused on the franchise space. Powered by industry veteran Franchise Payments Network, Pollinate works with your team to create reward systems that engage your customers while boosting sales, frequency, and visibility. Through custom-branded Pollinate apps featuring touchless payments, curbside pickup, and more, franchises have experienced a 17% ticket lift and a 50% increase in customer visits. Create new reward streams with Pollinate, where everybody will earn, redeem, enjoy, and repeat. For a glimpse of what's possible, check out the Pollinate dashboard at pollinate.com/marketing. And thanks for listening to Social Geek. We're here to help you get yourself ready for the comeback of a lifetime. This is the Social Geek Radio Network.